Side 2. Half of the reason why people experience frustration in the world is because they don't understand it. They do things that just don't work for them, and then they become frustrated. They create goals that they can't achieve. They create plans that will never materialize. They have dreams that will never come about. They look at people and they don't understand why people are what they are, or why they act the way they act. And of course, as you expand your perceptions, you'll know. And it'll be delightful to you. You'll go into a meeting and you'll know exactly what everybody's feeling. You'll be able to watch their feelings. You'll be able to understand what motivates them. You'll be able to understand why they flipped from here and flipped back to there. You'll be able to understand each and everything that's going on in the meeting. And as you've developed this extra power, you'll also be able to pick up more and more information. One of the exercises that I have my students go through when I'm teaching people personally or in small groups is I have them go through an exercise in noticing what's going on in the world. And they are always amazed at how little they notice. The way the exercise works is this. I walk up a city street with them, say, for example, and I have them walk 10 or 15 paces up the road, and I have them look down at the ground. And I have them do a special type of Taoist walking. It was a walk known as the pace of the tiger. And the pace of the tiger, or walking like a tiger, was a system whereby you put your toe down before your heel. And you put each step exactly in front of the next one. It takes a concentration of mind to be able to walk like that because it isn't natural. We normally walk with our heel first. We put our heel down, then we put our toe down. As I have the students walk in this walk of the tiger, they have to concentrate on walking to do it right. And as I make them do that, I make them look down at the pavement or at the ground slightly out ahead of themselves. Then I say to them, scan. And what I make them do is, I make them look up and I make them scan to the left and scan to the right with their vision. And as they do that, I ask them to notice what it is they see. And then I have them look down. I get them to walk on about another 5 or 10 paces, and I stop them. And I say to them, what was the color of that small car that made a left turn? What was the height of the man that came off the bus? What was the number on the shop? What did it say on that advertisement? What did it say on the side of that dustbin? What was the headline on the piece of newspaper that you walked over? How many slabs of pavement did we go across? What was the color of the front of that shop? How many cats crossed the road while you scanned? How many people were in the scene? And as they do this exercise, they realize that they don't see any of it. You can do this with a friend. Go out into a city street and have them walk with you. You look down, you walk in that pace of the tiger that I just described, and then you stop and you scan. And then you move on, and then you have your friend ask you, what did you notice? And you will amaze yourself how little you saw. And then you have to add into that all the things that you can't see. The radio waves, the TV waves, all that energy is passing through your body, the electricity, the feelings of the people. If you train yourself to be able to hold a very deep meditative state in your mind, you begin to slow down your brainwave pattern. And it moves out of a wave band known as beta, which is 14 to 22 cycles per second. And it begins to drop down through beta into what is known as alpha, which is 7 to 14 cycles a second. And then down below alpha into what is known as theta, which runs from about 4 to 6 cycles a second. In the theta wave band of energy, if you can slow your brain down to that speed and still be awake and still be able to open your eyes and function, you will actually get to the point where you will see the feelings of the people walking past you in that street. They lay around them like a cloud. They have a characteristic. They have a thumbprint. They describe the destiny of that person. At that point where you can perceive that, you're also going to have to be able to not judge them, not criticize them, just open yourself to energy. Because in the judgment, in the criticism, in holding an opinion about them, you filter out a lot of what you see. But when you look at that, you can see that there's so much more going on in any one set of circumstances than what we think is there. As you develop and you expand, all of that opens to you, and it opens very, very quickly. and you can develop inside your mind a heightened sense of awareness. And that heightened sense of awareness will not only keep you safe, but it'll allow you to help others. And they'll appreciate it, because you'll be able to see in any one given set of circumstances what the final conclusion is more than likely going to be. As you come into this dedication to develop your power, you have to understand that your consciousness, your ability to create thought forms, project them out into the universal law, project them out into life, and have life respond by giving you those things you want, is intimately linked to the amount of life force that you maintain. And what is life force if it isn't power? But most people don't realize that. They don't realize that the condition of their body is intimately linked with their ability to pull opportunity. But if you're resonating and creating consciousness, and your body is expressing only a little life force, it is sluggish, it's gummy, it's polluted, it isn't running properly, the quality or the power of your thought forms are weak. And so as we look at thought form empowerment, that the development of powerful creative consciousness, you have to understand what the seat of your energy is. And the root or the seat of your energy is your physical body, because you're here to be physical. So you understand that physical discipline is intricately involved with how much life force you maintain. If you're tired, your ability to create will diminish very rapidly. And you've probably experienced that. You started on some creative project, and after a while you got tired, and suddenly your thinking became muddled. It wasn't as clear. Things didn't work out as well. You can watch sportsmen. They'll start the game fresh and strong, and then bit by bit, as the game develops, they begin to make mistakes. Again, it's the physical life force taking energy out of the system because of its tiredness and robbing your creativity of its spontaneity, of the electricity that's there. Your life force is also intimately linked to your ability to process emotion. When you are involved in negative emotion, that robs you of life force. And you've experienced that, where you felt great and you met somebody and an argument developed, and after the argument was over, you felt lousy. You felt tired, your muscles went weak, and you suddenly felt, oh gosh, this is going to be a long day. When you express a negative emotion and you sustain it, it takes away your power. If you want to develop your personal power, you're going to have to pull out of emotion. And that means pulling back from the world somewhat and allowing it to be what it wants to be. Not having an opinion, not being so emotionally, intimately involved in what's going on. You've probably heard me say that one of the important things in this emotional detachment is that you have to pull out of the opinions of the world. And I won't go into that in great detail now, because it's a simple concept to get. But basically, what you're going to do is you're going to try to develop a lifestyle that is not reliant upon the opinions of other people. You are what you are. What they believe about you, or what they say about you, or what they think about you, that's a part of their reality. And you're not in the physical plane to change it or to comment upon it. As you begin to develop a strong emotional base, you begin to learn who you are. The real you, the individual, that wonderfully heroic, transcendent being that is in there, comes to the front. To develop strong emotional control, you have to have time on your own. You have to have what I call sanctuary. And sanctuary is a place in the house that you set aside for yourself, or a time of the day when you meditate or listen to music or read a book or think about your life. Sanctuary can be a walk on the beach at dawn. Sanctuary could be you just going and playing with your friends, or going out with your friends and hanging out and releasing energy. Sanctuary can be any one of those things, but there has to be a point in your life where you are able to review what it is you feel. When you're in the marketplace, when you're in the action of day-to-day living, it's hard for you to take time to feel out, hey, who am I? What do I believe? What do I want? What is actually going on? And isn't it true, when you're in a situation, it's harder to see what's going on than when you're out of it? You can be in a relationship that perhaps is a mess, and you don't see that it's a mess. And then a friend comes along to you and says, you know, that relationship's a real mess. And you suddenly think, my gosh, yeah, you're right, it is. It's a zoo. And so it's a matter of creating time for yourself to pull out, so that you can review and reflect upon your life. And as you do that, you'll dissipate emotion. The other great way to dissipate emotion is to exercise. When you exercise, you allow the body to detoxify itself. The brain fires endorphins, and that allows you to feel good. And so as you exercise, you process emotion through the exercise. It's almost like the aggression and the frustration comes out. I don't know what exercise program would be suitable for you. For each person is different, and obviously different age groups need different amounts of exercise. But you do need a certain amount of exercise every day, and it has to be the kind of exercise that sort of builds up a little bit of a sweat, an aerobic exercise of one kind or another. I don't necessarily agree with those philosophies that say you've got to run 10 miles or 20 miles, because I always think that for some people that's fine, but for others that's an incredible strain. But you should engage in some kind of exercise that gets the heart pumping, that gets the circulation going, that allows your body to detoxify and allows your emotions to dissipate. The other way that you can work with emotion very, very successfully is to use the clarity and the purity and the freshness of nature. Anytime that you can get out into nature, what happens is its life force, its purity, processes your emotions. You'll get that same processing from your house plants and from the greenery around you, from the animals, from the life that's around you. And the more that you express life and surround yourself by life, the more power you'll have. What you're doing now is you're looking at the world as energy, and you're picking and choosing those things that express exhilaration, that express life, and you're beginning to drop them around you like soldiers that will march around you, like the emperor's bodyguard that will protect you on an energy level. As you come into an emotional calm, you'll be able to begin to control your mental activity. So much of worry and difficulty and mental activity is just a reflection of a lack of inner peace. And so as you begin to understand that the way that your mentality is created and sustained affects your life force, you're going to want to keep calm. You're going to want to process difficulties out. The way to do that is to basically develop a system of communication in your life so that you can mentally communicate with others, letting them know what is causing you difficulty. As you understand that controlling the mind is paramount in developing your life force, you can see that you're going to have to watch what it is you're thinking. And if you get into a thinking pattern that isn't sustaining you or isn't supporting you, or a pattern of worry or difficulty, you're going to want to click out of that real, real soon. And the way to do that is to begin to understand that life isn't real. It isn't that important. If you make it over here, that's fine. But if you don't go there, you can go someplace else. There's always options open for you. There's always more than one possibility. And in any one worry or in any one difficult situation, you may only see mentally one path out. And that path may be blocked by some colossal gorilla standing on it. And yet as you get calm, you'll see 2 and 3 and 4 and 10 and 20 and 30 paths out of your difficulties. And so mental control and mental discipline is very much a factor in developing this life force. Very much so. And if you begin to have negative thoughts inside of you that are contradictory to the way you actually want to feel, you have to begin to not allow them. You can say to yourself, I don't accept that thought form. I don't accept that energy pattern. I'm eternal. I'm infinite. I'm positive. I see beauty. Things are going well. And bit by bit, your mind backs off its position of creating this worry, creating this difficulty. The other thing that you want to look at inside the mind is the amount of logic that you employ in your life. If you come out of too logical a base, and this is particularly true for men, you tend to, like, again, cut out all the spontaneity and all the possibilities. And so be careful with that. Once these three factors are in there, a physical strength, an emotional calm, a mental discipline, then you're going to be able to create a philosophy for yourself. And you create that philosophy by looking at all the teachings and all the lessons and the holy books and your life experience, and you begin to develop an idea, a modus for life that sustains you. Not a modus that is developed from the thought forms of others or from what they say you should do, but a philosophy of self that allows your own self-empowerment, that allows you to have more personal power. I think, as a metaphysician, as a mystical person, that you cannot divorce your whole life's quest from, like, having some kind of spiritual goal. And again, as I've said many times before, you can translate that into whatever religious or philosophical terms feel good to you, but there has to be a spiritual alignment as well. I think you have to sort of know that you're on the path and give yourself time to allow that path and allow that lifestyle to develop. As you do so, the power of your consciousness increases, and increases very, very quickly. And I think it's important that you align to that inner flow, that inner life force that's coming up from within you. I call that identity. An identity is seeing that you are more than your body, more than your mind, that you are, in fact, this infinite spark. And the more that you will identify with that and see beauty in your life, that you see life infinite, that you don't restrict yourself with 1,000 limitations, then that identity begins to grow. As you live and breathe and act the same way as the infinite life force is, then you become more of it. You become congruent with it. You slot in and you come out of the same vibration, the same energy pattern. Most people don't have identity. They see their lives as something separate from all beings, separate from the others. And that is a function of the ego, because the ego is there to defend your separateness and to defend your life. The whole function of the ego is to survive. As you become more expansive, more powerful, more resonating of this life force, then suddenly you realize that you're not separate to all things, you're a part of all things. And that allows you to feel connected. It allows you to go beyond loneliness. It allows you to understand what is going on. That inner connectedness is natural. But because of the mind and because of the way the ego is formed or the personality is formed, we tend to think that we're not a part of all things. And so we develop a society that endorses competition, that endorses an energy of like you doing well and somehow you beating up on your neighbor or, you know, pushing them down in some way and you getting up and ahead of them. As you develop power from a metaphysical base, from a spiritual base, you're not going to be interested in competing with others. All you're going to be interested in is competing with yourself, because you'll have an infinite identity, a limitless view of things, and that will help you become even more powerful. As you develop the identity, then you're going to have to develop a lifestyle that is congruent to that identity. In other words, the identity is a mental process of saying, hey, I accept this infinity, and I see it in all people, in all things. I see it in the birds, in the trees, and I can feel the animals. I can feel what's going on inside my own feelings. Now I'm going to develop a lifestyle that expresses that same limitless identity. That, for me, is congruence. When your life becomes an affirmation of this infinite, limitless person that you actually are, then everything you do is an affirmation of that congruence. And so you're not going to get involved in judging. You're not going to get involved in restricting. You're constantly going to come out of a positive expectancy. The opposite of that, of course, is negative yearning. And negative yearning is a function of the personality. It's a function of the ego. It yearns for things that it doesn't have. It is constantly dissatisfied. It constantly wants something else. And when you give it that something else, it wants something different. Negative yearning is saying, I can't have it. I can't make that a part of my feelings, so I know that it'll never appear in my life. You're not going to want to be aligned in that type of energy pattern, because it'll rob you of your power, and people don't like to hear that stuff. It's boring. It's terrible when you listen to somebody moaning about how their life isn't the way they want it. You kind of almost want to go and slap them around a little bit and say, hey, get your act together. If you don't like what you have around you, let's put some changes in there. And of course, the ego hates change. It likes structure. It likes regimen. It likes format. But as you're becoming more spontaneous and more powerful, you will accept change as a natural part of your life. It won't scare you. It'll be natural for you to change and change again and then change the change. The reason why people keep to structure, keep to form, is because the ego hates change and it fears life. It says, hey, if I detach from this city, this place, this situation, I'm not going to survive. But of course, that's not the case, because the energy that is creating your survival today will create your survival when you go into circumstances of change. Now, I'm not suggesting that you blindly head forth without looking at what's going on and move to Bujumbura and get rid of all your money and find yourself in a difficult situation. But I'm saying you have to be open to change, because change is a measure of your growth. It's a measure of how much power you can express. And so the person that is congruent with this infinity accepts all these concepts lovingly and realizes that freshness is a natural part of all things. And things have to be kept fresh. They have to be repainted and cleaned and altered and expressed and then re-expressed. And sometimes you may find that that change will pull you out of the family and friends that you're normally associated with into new areas, new cities, new countries, new opportunities. But you cannot move to a higher ground until you are prepared to leave go of the ground that you're in. And that, of course, is incredibly important. Most people fear success. They dream about it, they negatively yearn about it, but they can't handle it if it comes. Are you ready for success, I ask you? And think about it. And if you say, no, I'm not, that's fine, because you will be in the same position as most people would hold. They aren't ready for success. They think about it, but are they totally ready to step up on the podium of life and take control? If you want to be a singer, are you ready to stand up in front of 10,000 people at the auditorium and sing? You know, if somebody came up to you and said, okay, right now, go sing. Are you ready? And what happens is, because we're not ready for change, we tend to block off that change ever occurring. It's almost like the inner mechanism that allows us to stay balanced says, my individual isn't ready to step up on the podium and sing in front of 10,000. And so we better not have that opportunity until they're ready. But once you can identify that feeling inside of you, that inability to change, or let's say the reluctance to change your circumstances, then you can see how by accepting change lovingly, knowing and having a power inside of you that says, inside this change will come something even stronger. I'm always in the right place at the right time. The power that I have will always sustain me. I know it. It's obvious. Then suddenly you can incorporate all of that change and you can open a door to allow a more special, more powerful person to emerge from the restriction of the old person. The next concept in expanding personal power is an obscure concept that I want you to concentrate on carefully. It is a concept that I call variance. And it is basically the difference between what the personality or the ego believes about you and what the inner you knows to be true. You have an inner identity, an infinite divine identity that is absolutely real, that lives in the present, that is truthful, that is what it is. And then you have the ego that creates what Jung would call the persona. And the persona is the image that you project to other people, what it is you want them to believe about you. And that persona is a separate identity to the real you. In a person that is very aligned, that has worked upon their life a lot, the persona and the real you, or the real person, will be close to each other. They will come out of being real and not being embarrassed by being what they are. In a person that has a lot of variance, they will have a tremendous image of themselves that is way, way out beyond what is real. Now think of this. If your power comes from within you, and you are casting out thought forms in consciousness for your own self-empowerment, if you are a long way away from your seat of power, what is real, what is true, what is loving, then you're going to be projecting thought forms out of the persona that have little life force because they don't have that inner energy to sustain them. As you begin to look at what it is you believe about your own personality and your own life, you will see that parts of it are fake. Parts of it are like make-believe. Parts of it are where you pretend to be something that you're not. When you can feel comfortable and bringing all of that back to the middle, so to speak, to what is true, you begin to dissipate the variance in your life. And then you come out of more power. A good example of variance is in the way that the average person handles money. They have a certain amount of income, and that is what is real. That is what they can put their fingers on, so to speak, or what they can touch. They develop a lifestyle that's way beyond that income. And that is a lifestyle of the ego, of the personality, that says, I need to consume this to feel important. I need to have that to feel safe. I need to have this to relax. I need to have that to feel good. I need a third car and a fourth house and a fifth holiday, and so on. And the ego begins to create a lifestyle that's away from what is true and what is real. And sooner or later, that variance begins to develop a break-up pattern around the individual. It's almost as if they are so far from the truth, they're so far from what is real, that as they project thought forms out into the marketplace, they have such little energy, so much fragmentation, that those thought forms don't pull to you the money that you need. And so by being in debt, you can create for yourself an entire lifestyle that's built on a lie. As you look at that, you can see that if you come back into control, you come back into power. And then as you begin to resonate power, opportunities find you. There are people out there who want to give you money, who want to make their services available to you. But they are not going to step into a situation that is imbalanced. They're not going to step into difficulty. They don't need difficulty. They have difficulty of their own. And so if you're living in this fantasy world of the ego, they will understand that because people have tremendous ESP. They have tremendous inner knowing in many ways, and they will feel uncomfortable in hiring you or being a part of what you offer them or a part of the energy pattern that you want to involve them in. And so as you look at that, what I'm going to ask you to do over the next few weeks and over the next months that come on, I want you to look at what parts of your life are true and real and loving and what parts aren't. And as you can begin to identify the parts that are not, you can begin to change that and make the whole situation around you honest. As you develop that inner self-honesty, then you begin to develop more and more power. It's as if by concentrating on that inner energy inside of you, you concentrate on the life, on the God force in all things. And that God force will sustain you even more, for you pull to you whatever you concentrate upon. Concentrating upon that life force is only a matter of getting into the habit of reviewing what it is you feel, reviewing the circumstances of your life, seeing them as symbols, and processing those bits that you understand are holding you back. And that isn't difficult. It's just the difference between being a conscious individual and an unconscious individual. What Gurdjieff would describe as, let's say, the sleeping man. The sleeping man is one that walks through life and really doesn't see any part of it. You're not going to do that. You're going to want to develop your power, and you're going to want to have the exhilaration of it becoming stronger and stronger every day. And as you clear out the variance, as you clear out those parts that are not really totally true, then you come back into the center, and that seat of power is there. The inner you lives in the eternal now. It lives in infinity. And so as you begin to live that lifestyle of what is real, you're going to come back into the present. A lot of variance describes future events, and many people live in the fantasy of the future. The ego loves to say things like, oh gosh, one day, someday, I'm going to find this incredible person and marry them and we'll be happy ever after. And one day, someday, I'm going to make money and be wealthy beyond my dreams. And one day, someday, I'm going to work upon my body and heal it and feel better. The ego loves the future. And the reason why it loves it so much is because it doesn't have to do anything about it. It can live in the fantasy of these thought forms that don't mean anything. And as it begins to think about the future, as it moves out of the present, it dissipates consciousness in fantasy. Have you ever had the experience where a group of you have decided to go out on a picnic? And you've got together to discuss the picnic, and you've talked about the food, and maybe there was wine or juice, and you discussed about who was going to pick who up and what you were going to do, and you'd probably play a game of football out there in the park, and all of these events and the excitement of it, and you've discussed it for hours. And then when the picnic came, it was intensely boring. It's almost like all the energy of the event had drained out of it. The converse of that is when you've been walking down the road going to work and somebody said to you, come to the beach. And you go off on this spontaneous event and all these people are there and there's a barbecue and you have this fantastic time. And you arrive at work the next day and they say, where have you been? You say, oh, I went to the beach. I had this incredibly spontaneous event. And the reason why that beach event is so exciting is because you didn't disperse any of the energy in fantasy. When the ego takes you into the future, it begins to debilitate your power. The consciousness changes, and so you find yourself having less power. The conscious, evolving woman, evolving man, lives in the now, is comfortable not to fret about the future. You can't figure the future out. When it shows up, it'll be just the same as today. It'll be another day in this incredibly heroic sequence that you're going through. As you move out of fretting about the future, you center in the present, and that allows you an even further expansion of your perceptions. Because you're not spending 45 minutes of the day thinking about something that may or may not ever happen. As you come into the present, you notice it more.
This concludes side B. Please go to the next cassette to continue the program. Go to the next cassette to continue the program.